It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Welcome to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day on LRN.FM from the beautiful studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com in Phoenix, Arizona, where it's nice and rainy here. You know, my wife is down in Tucson. Her family, her parents came down for the holidays and visit with us, so they figured 120-something miles away would be better. they from State College, Pennsylvania, have a lot of their friends come down in winter in Arizona, and they went down there with them. So she's down there visiting, so they'll be up for Christmas. But they're at Tombstone right now. I was talking to her on the phone. They're at Boot Hill, you know, looking out over the valley there. It's a very nice scenery. You know, they make Western movies out of that, you know what I mean? So they're getting a dose of Arizona weather where it's snowing and blizzarding and everything up where they're from. They're down here going, yeah, Arizona, very nice. Well, it's nicer than most places, but I tell you, if we're the nicest place and we're more free than most places and we can exercise our rights more here and so on, and it's still this bad, damn. It must be really bad where you guys are. So this is one thing I want to do today. We're going to just yak it today. I don't have a guest. I have Thomas come in, the sales manager here. He had an interesting episode last night with the Phoenix police, and we'll talk about that a little bit. But it was interesting that it was right after we had left the Wrigley Mansion here at the Arizona Biltmore. There is the Arizona Biltmore. It's like, you know, it's got all the stars. You know what I mean? It has a very nice place there. It's been there for a long time. And right next, I mean, overlook, I mean, like a football field away, up on a rise there, a low mountain, a big hill. It on top of that is what sits is called the Wrigley Mansion. Now, the Wrigley Mansion is a beautiful home that the big mansion turned into a club and restaurant and bar and so on. And it's, you know, you have a lot of great events there, and we use it for a lot of different opportunities to have some fun. And some of the activists worked at, you know, this is one thing I got to share with you guys. And all you activists know this. Throughout the 90s, what happened was we had a lot of activists, a lot of freedom-oriented individuals that were in the media. Let me tell you how this works. When you have a generation, just like what we've have awakening now, you know, a lot of you guys over the last few years, young people come aware of what's really going on, fundamentally what the problem is with the world. It's always somebody rules you. Where you have the most productivity is where you have the least amount of control. You can see it in things like the internet. You got spontaneous order. You could never centrally plan Twitter or Facebook or whatever, you know. And then it grows into, becomes a victim of its own success. And I'll give you an example. Facebook now is starting to do face recognition on all your photos. You know, I got an old photo of someone. You know, this is where it's going. We have it up on Freedom Phoenix. We'll talk about it in a little bit. But, you know, imagine this. You got a high school photograph of someone, you put it into Facebook. Instead of searching for somebody's name, you put the picture in there and you say, yeah, go do a facial recognition on every photograph on the planet and go find this person for me. Well, you know, the bad guys are doing it. Might as well let the good guys do it. And that's one reason why I have, if you look on the bottom of the front page of Freedom's Phoenix, every page, you go to the bottom and you'll see my home address. Now, let me tell you what happens. Freedom's Phoenix is more clandestine. Here at the workshop, nobody knows where it's at. I mean, you kind of get an address. It doesn't have a storefront. Even if you knew the address, you wouldn't find it anyway. You got to be invited. You got to be brought over. You got to say, you know, this is where it is. You know, it's the honeycomb hideout. Now, local politicians have been here and police and everything. I mean, it's not like, you know, the bad guys don't know where we're at, you know. But, you know, it's just, we just don't want to be interrupted. I mean, it's not a secret. It's just, you know, everybody wants to come. Oh, I just wanted to come. No. If you're not, it's a workshop. If you're not here working, you're in my way, you know. So either you're doing something, you're helping somebody do something, or you're just bothering somebody. So that's pretty much how we've operated. That's why we're so productive. Well, this is what happened. I come home, it was Monday or Tuesday, and I come home, and I pull up, and I was having some repairs done on my car, a local mechanic doing clean out the engine, do whatever, oil change. So my daughter, they're keeping it overnight. She drives me home, and as we pull up, there's a big conversion van there, you know, kind of a little RV van. And there's two guys, and they're waiting on me. So they see us pull over. They're getting ready to leave. They came because, you know, and, you know, my daughter's like, yeah, and I go, yeah, it's all right, go. And I just happened, I took my gun out. You know, I have a little sidearm that I have, a little 9mm Kel-Tec, you know, just in case everybody wants to know. And, you know, I just, because if something happens and I'm out there and I'm advocating freedom and firearm ownership and all that kind of stuff, and something happens and I didn't have my firearm with me to protect myself and those I love around me, how much crap would I have to put up with, you know? But I'm a peaceful guy. I'm like, hey, man, I just avoid the problems. That's your biggest thing right there. But I have a firearm that I keep in my car. Well, I didn't want to leave it there, so I had it out, and I'm carrying it. So I get out of the car, got a firearm on my side. I got my 9mm Beretta, my Galco holster there, and there's two guys standing there, and here comes this guy with a gun in his hands with my computer and so on. And I go to my daughter, and it's all right, baby, you can go. So she leaves, and these guys are, hi, you know, Ernie Hancock. Yeah, how you doing, man? Well, they recognize me. They're from Montreal. There was a gentleman that had his cousin is going to San Francisco for a visit with some family, and they're going down to Baja in Mexico, down to, Cabo San Lucas and so on. They're going to be wintering in Mexico. They have some friends down there. They said, yeah, all this news you hear about, you know, the drug war stuff, that's up on the border with the U.S. because they got this drug war thing going on. You know, what do you think was going to happen? But down here, you know, it's all good and sunshine. You come on down. Well, going across, they're going to San Francisco. They were in Flagstaff, and they really wanted to come down and see the workshop. And they said, ah, come on, man, it's only a couple hours out of it. You know, so it adds a half a day to our travel. We want to go see Ernie. So they came down. What's the only address that they have? They went down. They couldn't find the workshop because they listen to the show, and they know everything. I pretty much tell everybody everything. And if you listen to the show long enough, you know everything about me. Where's your chickens, you know? And so he came in. He said, oh, you need some help getting stuff in. Yeah, we take it inside. He goes, ooh, Harvey. And he recognizes my little toy poodle I inherited from my son. And he knows all this stuff. Hey, Harvey. And I'm going, yep, you listen to the show. So we talked a little bit, and I my wife, Donna, had just pulled up, so I took her vehicle, and we went down to the workshop, and they got to meet with some of the guys here. You know, we had four or five guys are down here doing different stuff. So we sat down and chewed it for a little while and got to know each other, and it was very interesting, the story that they tell. They're from Quebec. They speak French. And they were first made aware of me from a speech I gave on the West Capitol lawn in Washington, D.C. at one of the Granny Warriors had an event there. And what they did is they came, they saw that video, and they go, wow, man, that guy had it going on. And I tell you what attracted them. They said, everybody's so negative about what's going on. And it is just, where's the pot? Where's the love? I mean, where's the solution? Where's the next? I mean, you know, there's going to be some bad stuff happening. So they started going to Freedom's Phoenix, started listening to the show, and they wanted to come visit, and the love was shared. I'm really not afraid of people just coming to my... It happens a lot more than you think. Because I'm just, you know, the bad guys know where I live. Might as well have some good guys know. So we're going to talk about, you know, just being open about this kind of stuff and what happened at the Wrigley Mansion last night on Bill of Rights Day. Bad. Gary Johnson was there. It'll be interesting.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, what are we fighting for here on Declare Your Independence? With me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day here on LRN.FM. Yeah, baby, we're fighting for some freedom. Well, you know, I tell you what we're fighting for. Minds. How many minds can we free? You know, there's a lot of things you can do for your mind. I mean, a lot of it's, you know, I got to show you guys something. Here you go. You ready? Ew. You see this? That's the juicing that I do like three times a day. My wife takes care of it. It's just carrots, Granny Smith apples, and something green like collard greens or kale or something like that. I've been doing that for over a year, and I'm telling you, it made me feel a lot better. It's taken years off of my aging here. You know, I feel a lot better. It doesn't matter. I mean, I don't get all anal about what I eat and everything, but if I drink this, I'm not hungry, so I'm not eating a lot of junk. And if I do eat some junk, I'm like, ew. Like last night, I had, you know, sourdough Jack, man. I'm from Jack in a Box. And my wife down in Tucson, so I snuck one. You know, and I'm like, I go, this is good. I feel like crap. But, you know, the thing is that, you know, if we can feed our minds with good nutrition and so on, it really makes a big difference. And I encourage you to do that. Just, I tell you what, the price goes down. That's another thing that we're going to be doing. We're going to be doing a show on Bountiful Baskets. It's a co-op to where you, we're going to be doing something on it next week. What you do is you go on Monday and Tuesday, and it's all over the country. So you can, you know, any of you, you just go check it. Bountiful Baskets. You Google it and it'll come up. You order for $15, you get a basket full of fruits and vegetables. And there are some of our friends here, young people that, you know, they're taking this nutrition thing seriously. And they, you know, living on, you know, a couple hundred bucks a month, where do they get their protein? Donna's eggs from our chickens. Got chickens, you know, because a lot of nutrition there. We're just feeling better. If America would just feel better, things would be better. And it's better than not, okay? Now, what I wanted to talk to you guys about is what's coming, you know, and Wrigley Mansion, we had the Bill of Rights Day there that was done by Andre Campos and Alan Corwin. Now, Alan Corwin, we've had him on the show before. He writes gun laws, you know, at gunlaws.com or something like that. He writes a lot of firearm freedom books and what the laws are in different places. And he also co-authored a book, Supreme Court Decisions on Guns. They always say, oh, no, they've never done. Heck, man, there's dozens of cases that had to do with firearms. So he has, over the last few years, every year, he would have on Bill of Rights Day, the 15th of December, he would have an event up at Wrigley Mansion. I think this is probably at least the third or fourth year that he's done this. And it's interesting, you know, they get this one guy that comes up and he dresses as Thomas Paine. And I've seen this guy before. And if you are a Republican, you know, you're wanting the GOP, we're going to save the world and we're in charge now kind of thing. You don't like what he has to say, because Thomas Paine was the one. He was governor of Virginia. He was the longest serving governor in history. You know, I mean, I'm good. You know, Washington wanted him to be Secretary of State. They wanted him to be in charge of the blah, blah, blah. And he goes, nope, I'm good. Virginia. Well, Thomas Paine was Patrick Henry. I was close. Patrick Henry. So Patrick Henry, he's like, gives some speeches and, you know, give me liberty, give me death speech, and some of his speeches and excerpts from him talking to the state legislature about ratifying the Constitution. You want to know where the Bill of Rights came from? And we talked about this before on the show. The Bill of Rights came from the compromise they had with the Anti-Federalists. They were like, man, we're ready to have us another revolution. This power, the power, the power, power to tax, power in eminent domain, the power to, you know, regulate commerce, the power, power, the general welfare clause. Man, this sucks. And if we don't have a Bill of Rights, say you have another revolution. Well, that was the compromise that was done. And the guys doing the Constitution, they're like, yeah, whatever. Just as long as we get our central power, we'll worry about that other thing later, this dang Bill of Rights throwing up hurdles, because they have the judges. They get to determine, yeah, that's constitutional. Kilo, we can take your goodies. You know, now, that's what Bob Levy from the Cato Institute, he has a book called The Dirty Dozen, and he highlights 12 Supreme Court cases of how we got here. I mean, 12 cases that screwed us immensely. Well, it started back with Hamilton and I think Madison. They're going on about the the general welfare clause. Well, they kind of put that in. And you know how these guys are, guys like Hamilton. They're, you know, this little slimy guys. We'll just put this little word in there, make it all flowery and sound good and everything. But we'll put this in there. We'll have our own judges determine that, you know, provide for the general welfare means we can do whatever the heck we want. Well, of course, Madison and the guys are like, look. Let me tell you what general welfare means. It means the general welfare is benefited by being free. You know, it's not a central plan for, you know, general welfare. The general welfare is that you protect me from anybody's central plan. You know, so this argument goes on. So right in the beginning, we're already starting to get screwed. There was another case where they hammered in on the Commerce Clause. And I can't remember the case, and it's not a test. You don't need to write it down anyway. But the Commerce Clause, what they did is they go, all right, FDR decided that we're going to raise prices by limiting supply. You know, people are in depression. People are starving. You know, we'll just plow under the wheat fields. You know, we'll slaughter cows. I remember in high school in the 70s and everything, they had all these problems. They were slaughtering their cows and killing their chickens and so on because they just couldn't, all the regulation and everything, they couldn't make, you know, they're pouring out the milk and they're doing, I mean, we've gone through this, wage and price controls with Nixon. So I'm going, you know, do we ever learn anything? No, I tell you what we learn is that those in power, those in control, it's all about to benefit them, not us. Of course, Dr. Paul's saying, yeah, houses should go down to 20, you know, so poor people can buy houses. No, we got to keep prices up. It's going to get bad. And because we've went through this before for the same reasons, and we'll talk about it a little bit. But this one case was a gentleman was growing his own wheat. And he goes, hey, man. They go, you can't do, you got to plow it under, you can't use this, you're affecting commerce. He goes, what? I'm not transporting over state lines. I'm not even selling it. I'm using it on my own farm. I'm eating it and using it as feed for my livestock. So I'm good. I'm out. And they go, you know what? This is the ruling. Seeing as how, if you didn't grow that wheat, you would have to buy it on the market. And the fact that you're not buying it means that you're affecting commerce and jurisdiction claimed. Next. Really? Okay. They want to play that way. Then there's other cases like that. It would go on, like a Kelo decision. We're going to be able to take land, okay? And there's Lauren Curio in Free Keene up there. You know, I met Lauren. She's a great activist. She's one of the Kelo 7. Arrest me. Because they understood that how important this issue was. Can you take someone's private property for private interest? Well, this is how they ruled it. Just like, you know, growing your wheat thing. Well, if we built a pharmaceutical plant here and a hotel and all this other stuff, we get more tax revenue, public benefit, we take it. Well, they never built it. You know, it doesn't matter. You know, this is all these cases. And we had Bob on before. And, you know, we'll talk about what he had to say. And then, you know, Thomas, we got him in. We'll tell his little run-in with the police last night. We'll talk about it. You guys stay right there. Got all kinds of information for you. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Yeah, Thomas wanted me to make sure you got to see it. It's Wickard versus Filburn. Yeah, it'll be a test later, I guess. You know, this is what it was. Let me go ahead and scroll down here. Legislation was the Agricultural Adjustment Act of 1938 limited the area that farmers could devote to wheat production. The stated purpose of the act was to stabilize the price of wheat in the national market by controlling the amount of wheat produced. Now, of course, it went on, and finally in 42, they were able to, you know, come up with their decision. They decided that the government rules you. You know, so, and there's other cases like this. It goes on and on and on and on and on. So the discussion last night was this. Now, and I know Alan, he's they gave a rating. You know, at the end of the whole presentation, Bob Levy told how we got screwed from the beginning, you know, in the early 1800s, man. They already had Hamilton was the guy. He was the guy that did, because what they were going to do, and this is what the Patrick Henry character was going on about, he said, look, he goes, you were only supposed to, you know, like tinker with the Articles of Confederation. They were going to do some weights and measures stuff and, you know, kind of, you know, how they're going to negotiate currencies and, you know, whatever. It's just a little tinkering, and we got, you know, these sovereign states. Well, Hamilton had the plan from the beginning. He locked the doors, made it secret, and said, we're going to do this and do government. And guess what? It's going to have a central authority. Well, that was always the goal. Central bankers. It's like a playbook that they, you know, took from pyramid times or something, man. You know, the secret handshake guys. And if it wasn't this one group, it'd be another group. Now, there's always bad guys. They always want their parasitic class. They call them the ruling elite. You know, there's always some king, monarch, ruler. And if it's now it's competing. You know, you got the East and West and Africa and that. You know, there's always somebody going to rule the planet. And if it's not one of these guys, there may be, I don't know, you know, space aliens or something. There's always somebody who wants to rule you. What was so great about America was the concept of I get to rule myself. How about that? I vote that one if I'm going to vote. So you have that in competition with always it gets to the point to where they just suck off of the people, just the masses, to the point to where, hey, it's time to call a herd. We're going to have us a pandemic, a world war, whatever. I mean, you know, whatever it takes, we'll just, you know, reconstitute everything. And they always been wanting to go for this global thing. Oh, but, you know, tighter your fist. More star systems leak between your fingers. So what happened? Bob Levy made a great case for, you know, how he got screwed and why and who did it and so on. But we've had Bob on the show. He was one of the first speakers at Freedom Summit. And in our first year, 2001, Bob was one of the speakers, along with Don Brudeau from George Mason University. Well, Don Brudeau was another speaker this year at the Freedom Summit. And we pretty much finished with, we'll be done in the next day or two from all the speeches at the Freedom Summit. It takes a long time to load those up and edit them and all that kind of stuff. Sierra's finishing probably today, tomorrow, and we'll start loading those up and we'll let you know and you go see the speeches. Very, very cool. And we've been working behind the scenes on Freedom's Phoenix to have our own servers and so on so that, you know, like YouTube and whatever just doesn't go, oh, blip, you're off. Because we know better. I mean, if you're planning ahead, man, you know to set things up to not let a central plan for you. So we'll let you know when that's ready. And we'll start putting up all the other Freedom Summit speeches, too, because these are great. This is why we know what was coming, a lot of these guys doing this. Now, the thing with Bob, though, is he's with Cato Institute. He's got his own thing. You know, he's an older generation. He's still got a patriotic, nationalistic flavor to him. We got to use the system to fix the system kind of deal. So that's where he and I kind of we go out a little bit. And Mark Victor and I, we were both presenters of one of the amendments there. I think Mark did the fourth and I did the sixth. And it was an interesting event. Bob made a very good case for how we got where we are, but what's the solution? Well, of course, you know, we're going to use the system, fix the system, elect the right people to, you know, whatever. And And then we had Gary Johnson. Now, he's former governor of New Mexico that is in hard running for president on the GOP ticket. Now, I talked to him a little bit and see how his campaign was going and everything. Of course, he starts this, it's still exploratory committee. We're not really, yeah, blah, 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 blah. You're running, right? You know? Yes. The GOP debates are going to be in May and June. CNN and Fox are going to have them in New Hampshire and South Carolina. I think Fox is in South Carolina. CNN is in New Hampshire within a month of each other. I think CNN's first and then Fox. Do you plan on being in that? Absolutely. Yep, we're going to be involved in all of them. Well, when he gave his speech, I mean, he hit on a bunch of stuff. You know, I vetoed a whole bunch of different bills. I did this, I did that, you know, and he was better than most. And he gets up and he goes, you know, in the late 90s, I came to the realization of a lot of things. One of them is, you know, this drug war sucks. And he kind of maybe panted a little bit, you know, well, we'll do medical marijuana, but then we do, you know, the drug war this and that, and we'll regulate and tax, and you got to show ID and, you know, whatever. But the thing is that to this crowd, you know, a Bill of Rights GOP Republican kind of coming in, Goldwater Institute, Wrigley Mansion GOP kind of function, you would think a lot about, you know, probably not even half of the crowd were kind of, you know, everybody, yay, boom, boom, clapping, you know, right on. And we need to pull Afghanistan now. And we need to do this. And we need to do this. So it was kind of, you know, maybe not as strong or as principled as Dr. Paul is. But here you have another star child, you know, of the GOP movement. They're going to put somebody up there. All of a sudden, you have a crowd up there, and you're going to have Huckabee and Romney and maybe Newt Gingrich and Palin and all these guys. But they're not just going to have Dr. Paul taking these positions. You have guys like Gary Johnson. Maybe, you know, Judge Napolitano might get involved in this thing or something, or somebody like them. So all of a sudden you have, and they got, and that's one thing Alan was saying. He's going, well, yeah, yeah, there's kind of a libertarian bent here now, kind of almost being apologetic to a lot of the supporters there in the GOP. And it was so clear that the culture has changed. So when they got Mark and myself up there presenting, we got our table in the back. Oh, and you Free State Project guys, you know the Don't Tread on Me flag that you have with the porcupine on it? Oh, yeah, we proudly displayed that one. He said, we'll put Freedom's Feet. Nah, we'll put the porcupine up there. I think that was cool. That kind of caught people off guard. Then we have them speaking, and they're making the case for, you know, how broke it is and so on. But we've got to get in there. We're going to go vote. You know, we're going to go fix it. So a lot of libertarians were just, you know, when Alan said, he goes, yeah, there's kind of a libertarian bent here, there's a lot of libertarians. Mark Victor was in the back room. He runs up the middle of the room and he yells and he goes, no, it's a freedom thing. You know, like, no, slap, 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 slap. So it's changing. It's a culture thing. This is the thing that I keep trying to stress. It's not about voting. It's not about election totals. It's about, that's side effect. It's about freeing your mind. It's a change in the culture. As this is going on, you remember now Senate Appropriations Chairman Russell Pierce. Now, you guys remember that name from SB 1070, you know, the immigration bill. You know, I'm going to get them Mexicans. Well, he and I went at it. I mean, you know, we were back and forth during the time, but I've known Russell a long time. He's been on the show several times. So I know that, you know, I just go up and, hey, Russell, what's up? So we were talking and it went like this. I go, Russell, let me tell you what I know. I know the state's big time financial trouble, big, huge, major. And as appropriations chairman, if you don't know this, you know, you need to do some studying. And if you do, you need to, you know, share with everybody because you're not being honest. Now I go, look, there is going to come major upheaval in this state. I know that the federal government is going to go, all right, you want to bail out? You know, we're going to be buying all these. They already started with the municipal bonds, you know, local, just trying to drag this thing out one more, I don't know, month, you know, one more election cycle, certainly get past the holidays or something. But this is all going to come tumbling down. It won't happen all at once, but it will happen overnight. And the overnight is coming. Man, you better be getting some gold and silver. Now, I know Thomas won't go on and on and on about this gold thing. We may talk about that another time. But this is what happened. Russell, are you going to be making deals with the federal government? Is it going to come with strings? You know, they're going to say you're not allowed to resist, which means the state's going to be counted on to put down resistors. Yeah, we'll talk about what he had to say when we come back. I'm a scared man. You should be too. What are we going to do about it? We'll talk about it. We'll see you right there.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock. Turn on the tube, well, I see a whole lot of people crying. Don't blame me, but point the crooked little fingers at everybody else. Spend all the time feeling sorry for themselves. Victim of this, victim of that. Your mama's too thin and your daddy too fat. Get over it. Get over it. All this whining and crying, bitching and fit. Get over it. Get over it.
The Matrix is a system, Neo. That system is our enemy. But when you're inside, you look around, what do you see? Businessmen, teachers, lawyers, carpenters, the very minds of the people we are trying to save. But until we do, these people are still a part of that system, and that makes them our enemy. You have to understand, most of these people are not ready to be unplugged. And many of them are so inert, so hopelessly dependent on the system, that they will fight to protect it. Were you listening to me, Neo? Or were you looking at the woman in the red dress?
I was...
Look again. Freeze it.
What are they?
Sentient programs. Anyone we haven't unplugged is potentially an agent. Inside the Matrix, they are everyone, and they are no one. They are guarding all the doors, they are holding all the keys, which means that sooner or later, someone is going to have to fight them.
Someone.
I won't lie to you, Neo. Every single man or woman who has stood their ground, everyone who has fought an agent has died. But where they have failed, you will succeed.
Why?
Their strength and their speed are still based in a world that is built on rules. Because of that, they will never be as strong or as fast as you can be.
What are you trying to tell me? That I can dodge bullets?
No, Neo. I'm trying to tell you that when you're ready, you won't have to.
We won't have to. This is the point that I'm trying to make. The Matrix is just, it's a mindset. It's where people are in their lives. It's how they view things. If we can jack into the Matrix, and that's what we were talking about yesterday. If you go to freedomsphoenix.com and you scroll down, you can see that we have the show on video that we did yesterday with Ian Freeman on LRN.FM. And we got the video up so we can show you different equipment that you can need. And you do. There's a lot of things that you can do. I mean, we have a printing press and T-shirt making, DVD duplicating and sign production and blah, 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 blah. A lot of ways. Videos, so on. A lot of the activists. I mean, you get your $18 video camera from Big Lot and boom, you're on the internet and you're having some fun. You can do your Skype program. I encourage you. It's, everybody's so worried about the quality. And I'm going, of the production. I mean, the quality of content. How many minds can you free? Can you free your friends, your family? And how do you do it? You know, that's one thing Stephen Molyneux did at the Freedom Summit. He's like, how to be, what was the name of it? It was how to be assertive without, making them mad. I mean, basically is what it was. And how to go on the offensive without being offensive. That's what it was. And these are the kinds of techniques that we need, because I've learned this and I've seen it happen in my own family. And I'll tell you one thing. I give you a lot of examples, but basically it goes like this. If you challenge somebody, instead of just kind of leading by example or showing them, you don't try to convince them. You just want them to understand why you're so convinced. If you do that, then there's no resistance. They come across things. They know to come talk to you. They're getting it. But if you're just trying to get affirmation, if you're trying to get, some kind of agreement, you don't understand, they're never going to. They just keep digging their foxhole deeper and keep piling up sandbags every time you open your mouth. If they even listen to you, you just share. And when they come across whatever, they know who to talk to. If you're doing this long enough, and all you young people out there, I'm telling you, let's say you're 25. What's your life going to be like when you're 30? You got your friends and family around you? Are they starting to see you as a source of information for when things go to crap and they don't understand it? This is where I've been. I was you. And at night I'm going, hey, man, I'm just, head down and plow. And we don't bring it up at the Thanksgiving table unless they make the mistake of asking me a question. I answer. Well, then they keep trying to get me to agree with them. And I'm like, well, I'm, are you using force? And they'll say all this stuff. They'll go, well, you got to this and this and this and people need it. I'm going, huh? Voluntarily? Or you got to use a 45 to somebody's head. So this is the kind of the mentality that we're up against. But you can see the cultural shift here in Arizona. It's why we have legislation passed that give relatively a lot more freedom, no permit for firearms stuff. That didn't happen all by itself. It was a cultural change here. It became where elected officials here knew that, man, if they wanted to get the support of the peoples, they had to do it. Why? Because the people demanded it. So they still go around calling it constitutional carry, even though when law enforcement comes up, they can disarm you. Or you're not doing any crime, nothing here. Hey, I'm law enforcement. I'm standing here. You got to give me your gun. And you're calling it constitutional carry? I don't think so. So I go, when you guys do that, I was talking to the guys that were responsible for lobbying for the bill there and so on, the Constitutional Defense League or whatever it is. It's a gun group. They were very instrumental in getting that passed. And I always work from the cultural. I would make it an issue. It would always be an issue. It's always somebody talking about it. It's always giving the examples, always pointing out why it's bad. We're safe. Like, you know, you have this guy on CNN to make a big deal. He goes in to the a school board meeting. Everybody leaves. He wanted to do, you know, death by cop. He was suicide by cop. He didn't shoot anybody. He could have. He's firing at him. He's firing a gun. So eventually they shoot him. Well, the thing is, that's what he wanted. He didn't want to kill anybody, obviously, but, you know, he wanted to go down because his wife lost a job. They had no benefits and so on. He's making a big V on the whiteboard there, and, you know, here we go. Well, on Facebook, what is it? One of the activists here, his name's Ben. He's an ASU student, doing really well there. You know, he's a smart boy. And he is one of the valet parkers at the mansion up there last night. So he listens to the people talking. And we were talking afterwards, you know, and he brought Thomas and I back to our cart and everything, and the little golf cart and driving us around. And he goes, listen to what these people are saying about Gary Johnson. They're thinking, well, that drug thing, but yeah, he's pretty good. You know, so they're getting their mind woken up a little bit, because what's happening is the culture is changing. They're starting to see which side are they on popular culture, or certainly principled culture. So it's starting to crack. Well, he was saying that on Facebook when this CNN guy, you know, the guy that brought the gun out and, you know, they suicide by cop, that on Facebook, a lot of people go, see, we need to ban guns. So, you know, that was coming out, man. There's a whole fleet of people who are coming out doing, oh, yeah, we got to do away with this gun thing. Well, of course, you know, there's enough savvy people with the rhetoric, such as him, go on and goes, no, this is why we all need guns. You know, if we all had fire and the guy come out, pulled out a gun, boom, done. Problem solved. It's like you have Jodie Foster in the movie Panic Room or something. All these movies, you know, we should do a movie that's all the, you know, movies not made. You know, a guy breaks in and boom, movie over. You know, you get the carjack. Oh, we have a young man here. He's a hunting guide here in Arizona, in the western part of the state, up along Colorado River. And he was here in the valley, and he's one of the – he comes down and so on. He was downtown 1:30 in the afternoon. A guy came to his door, opened the door. He's at a stoplight, put a gun to his head, and said, get out of the car. And the guy was high, and he's all freaking out. And the guy, hey, okay. And he was getting really aggressive, and he's like, whoa. So kind of the story, I don't know all the details, don't want to talk about until they kind of squash everything next week, it looks like. He pulls out his firearm, empties three into him, boom, the guy's dead, and they arrest him. Guy's got a gun to your face. You defend yourself with a gun, they arrest you. They want to charge you. Some prosecutor's going to make a name for himself. Oh, we're already doing all this play. Well, it looks like prosecutor may just drop everything, saying that, you know, not prudent at this juncture. So we'll see how that goes out. We'll have them on after this is all over. But I'm going, you know, it's this kind of mentality. You give people the understanding that we are safer when the good guys are armed, because criminals, bad guys, don't give a crap what the law says. So this changes people. They start to see things. But it challenges the authority of the state. They don't like that none too much. So Russell and I talking a little bit, and, you know, it became clear to me that we're not safe in the city. That there's going to be conditions by the federal government's going to come in, drag it out one more election cycle, one more month, one more something. They're going to need the states to help them repress any kind of resistance. You're not allowed to resist. You're not allowed to dissent. What are we going to do now? I don't know, I think I'm going to go mobile. We'll keep Freedom's Phoenix and the radio show going, but maybe from the road. We'll let you know how it's going. We'll be right back. You stay right there.